Well, a poll out today says New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has a 72% approval rating, the highest any New Jersey governor has ever had in Quinnipiac University polls, undoubtedly due to his response to Hurricane Sandy. Our next guest says Christie might ride that goodwill all the way to the White House, as might New York's Andrew Cuomo. Each man has made a lot of promises, and following through will be costly. Cuomo says it'll take $42 billion for New York to bounce back. Chris Christie estimates Sandy caused, maybe nearly $37 billion in New Jersey. But in a cover story for Newsweek called 12 Ways to Stop the Next Sandy, journalist and author David K. Johnston says in addition to paying for new preventive measures, we have to pay a long overdue bill on old American infrastructure. David joins us from WAER in Syracuse, New York. And David, you point out the U.S. spends just 2.4% of its economy on infrastructure. That's compared with 5% in Europe, 9% in China. Other countries have better roads and public buildings than we do. How did it get this way?
Well, I think it's because we turned away from the New Deal. When Reaganism began, Ronald Reagan was, whether you love him or hate him, was a great leader, and he changed our direction. And he sold the public on this idea that markets will solve all problems. Markets price very well the things they are paid to price. They don't price at all, however, things they are not paid to price. And things like maintaining the infrastructure are not something that the market handles at all well. We need to have a public philosophy that understands that the basis of all private wealth is commonwealth, that the foundation on which we build our economic skyscrapers, if it's made of sand, will be washed away in a storm. We need to build solid foundations, which means taxes and money spent on things like privately owned utilities, to provide reliable, efficient, low-cost service from electricity, water, natural gas, oil, to roads, bridges, subways, tunnels, all the things that business needs in order to succeed. And in the short run, of course, you can use those things up, artificially inflate your profits, and unless somebody is saying, hey, what about the long run, you will over time get worse off.
Well, you've talked to experts. How worse is worse? What are some of the scenarios that you've heard?
Oh, we can have situations arise in which, you know, it's no longer practical for people to move into New York City, for example, to commute. There's only one railway tunnel for people between New Jersey and New York. Some of the big banks still are not fully operational in New York because of the flooding.
Sure. J.P. Morgan Chase, along with other high-rise office buildings in Lower Manhattan, were told that they may not get power back for weeks, if not months.
Yes, and this is reflective of how we haven't been properly taking care of the corporate infrastructure, that is Con Ed in this case, to supply electricity in a reliable way. And, you know, in the Netherlands, a country that is either at or below sea level, people aren't afraid of being flooded. And when they have terrible storms, their electricity doesn't go out because they invested in reliable systems that continue to work even when we have terrible storms. We need to do the same thing.
We're gonna talk about some of these things that need to be done, in your view, David K. Johnston. But, you know, you also heard from emergency responders who might have to dynamite whole neighborhoods to prevent a fire from spreading.
Yes, this is something urban fire departments have talked about for years. I wrote a story at the LA Times, I think 30, 35 years ago about this, that if you get a huge urban conflagration that gets out of control, you have to do the same thing in a city that you do in a forest fire, where you set part of the fire to deny fuel to the flame so it stops spreading. And in the 1906 earthquake in San Francisco, my hometown, the fire department had to dynamite buildings to stop the spread of fires. Now we have all these natural gas pipelines, hundreds of which broke, and there were so many fires the authorities couldn't even count them along the Jersey Shore because these ancient, decrepit pipelines that should have been replaced a long time ago snapped and broke, and if there was an ignition source nearby, set off flames. And, you know, we had two whole neighborhoods, one in New York and one in New Jersey, burned to the ground as a result.
Well, and this is number one on your list of a dozen projects where investing both corporate and tax dollars in infrastructure would pay off in different ways, including saving lives and keeping, you know, whole neighborhoods from burning down. Accelerate replacement of natural gas pipelines.
Well, we've had a series of, I think, canary in the mine disasters with natural gas pipelines. The most recent in 2010 in San Bruno, just south of San Francisco, where an entire city block in a suburban area blew up, killed 8 people. If it had happened just a couple of hours later, it probably would have killed dozens of people. Mm-hmm. And it was a pipeline laid with a defect in 1957. There are high-pressure pipelines out there put in place when Truman was president. We need to replace these or we're going to have more of these disasters. And if we have one in a place like Manhattan or downtown Boston, in my book, The Fine Print, I lay out the gory, awful details that fire experts expect, and it's really hellacious.
Well, and you write that New Jersey's natural gas chair, this is Lawrence Downs, had earlier this year told shareholders that his company had rock-solid infrastructure, but if you looked in the annual report and the fine print, which apparently you did, the company planned to slash pipeline spending, including maintenance, from $121 million to just $70 million. So this is just one company, but it doesn't sound as if the private companies are thinking all along the lines of replacement. They're cutting money.
Yeah, he is not an outlier. I have looked up the records of many, many companies on this, and particularly natural gas and water pipelines, companies are cutting their spending. One of the biggest electric utilities in America, Pacific Gas and Electric, got increased rates to replace power poles that it says have to, a life of 50 years. They were replacing them in recent years on a 775-year cycle. All across the country, financiers have gotten their hands on electric utilities, and instead of planning for the future and for reliable service, they've been stripping them of assets, not maintaining them, firing workers, which makes them look very profitable for them, but are incredibly damaging to society. And this is one of the things Governor Cuomo has promised to deal with. He's threatened to revoke the licenses of all seven corporate-owned electric utilities in New York. And he's appointed this Moreland Act Commission with subpoena power. Now we'll see if he's really serious about that or it was just talk.
Can he, for you know, this is still America, can he force these utility companies to make these changes themselves and take it out of the paychecks and or shareholders' pockets? Or will they do this and just simply raise the cost of these utilities for the people who use them?
Well, we may end up paying more for electricity than we have been. May, emphasize the word may. But absolutely, the states have the authority to regulate these utilities and to make sure that we follow both what's called the just and reasonable doctrine, just and reasonable prices and just and reasonable profits, and that we follow the requirement that they serve the public convenience and necessity. If you don't do that, you can lose your license. And so the government has plenty of levers to make these companies behave. But for years, instead of having balanced regulation, we have been pointing to regulatory commissions, people from the industry, people who go to the industry, people who are identified with the industry and are not looking out for the customers, whether they're big industrial companies or a couple in an apartment.
David K. Johnston, his cover story Newsweek, 12 Ways to Stop the Next Sandy. Other items on his list, invest in more riprap seawalls. These are the jetties that extend out from a beach and build up sand dunes. Elevate trains that travel through marshland. Repair dams. David says it's only a matter of time before another Johnstown flood. Towns wiped out by bursting dams. Quite a scenario he sets up. More of his suggestions in 1 minute, here and now. Welcome back to our conversation with journalist David K. Johnston, who's written a Newsweek cover story, 12 Ways to Stop the Next Sandy. We've been going through the list. And David, you say replace old water and sewer mains and promote smaller electric grids instead of these huge multi-state grids we have now so that when something happens, fewer people are left without electricity?
Yeah. You'll recall in 2003, a limb fell on a tree and an operator made a mistake in Ohio and 50 million people right. in the U.S. and Canada lost power. We used to have grids that were much more discrete, and you would have, you might lose Cleveland for a day, but you didn't lose the whole Northeast for several days. And I think this has just been a major policy error. We should be focusing on more discrete grids and on more reliability.
Well, and stay with the electrical utilities for just a second. You know, we saw the transformers that exploded. What needs to be done there?
Well, utility companies, and I've interviewed utility workers all across the country about this, as well as executives, and all of them tell the same story. Many utilities, particularly the ones Europeans now own here in the U.S., are not maintaining switches and transformers and power poles. They've radically cut their staffs. I mean, we had the U.S. military put linemen and cherry pickers on military transports in California and bring them back to the New York, New Jersey area to help. That's ridiculous. We shouldn't have to do that. Half the states, kept the traditional old utility system that was vertically integrated. You made the power and you sold the power to people. Their rates have risen since 1999, 9% in real terms. But in the states like New York and New Jersey, where they broke apart generation of electricity from delivering it to the customers, rates have gone up 48%. And I'm no fan of monopolies, but the model of regulated monopolies that were vertically integrated, their prices didn't go up nearly as much.
Yeah. Staying just for a second with electricity, you say increased tree trimming to prevent downed electrical lines during storms. That's causing a lot of controversy in a lot of tree-loving communities here in the New England area. But you say the trees, you have to maintain those.
You know, Robin, I've had the same thing happen to my trees that everybody else has. You know, they come along and they just hack them. They don't do it with any grace or charm or thought about the look of your trees. Of course, one answer to that is do it yourself and absorb the cost of that. Now, in new construction and in urban areas, we should be undergrounding utilities. They're much more reliable when we do that. It's very costly to do it in already developed areas, but to the extent that we can, we should be undergrounding our utilities. And, you know, in big cities, they basically are. Look around Manhattan or downtown Boston. You don't see electric poles.
Yeah. Well, moving to communications, you say stop AT&T and Verizon from shutting down the old copper wire telephone systems. It's funny. Most of your suggestions are for utilities to bring things up to date and into the future. You say in this case, keep some of the old technology.
Well, there are telephone wires that were put in place in the 19th century that still work. And during storms, when the grid goes down, if you're on a telephone that goes over the internet, these new VoIP services, you don't have any electric service, you don't have any phone service. But if you have an old copper wire phone, it still works. Now, that system has been completely depreciated and written off, so it's not costing the phone companies much to keep it. What's happened here is I want us to go to the future. I don't want us to have regulations that say every new car will come with a buggy whip in the trunk. Mm-hmm. But let's have balanced regulation and let's recognize the copper wire technology can be very important during national emergencies. If we kept enough of it that we had the equivalent, for example, of the old telephone boxes that police officers used before they had radios, but we're getting one-sided rewriting of the rules by the utility companies for the utility companies with virtually no public information or knowledge because the news media hasn't been writing about this.
Well, you raised the question about how some of your suggestions might be harder to do. Because of the interface with the government, former New York Governor Pataki, George Pataki, advocates what you were just saying, burying electrical lines underground. In an opinion piece, he writes in the Wall Street Journal, but he says it's not easy. Utilities have to get government approval for rate increases before they can make improvements. Also, utilities only get FEMA money to replace damaged equipment, not to improve upon equipment. So some of these things you're suggesting, we have to, I would think, change the system by which some of these utilities can get the money to do this.
We do, and we need to update our rules. But the most important thing we need to do, Robin, is have a set of rules for utilities in which there is input by the customers. And yes, people may well have to pay more, but if they don't pay more, they'll pay more in a different way through an inability to get power after or during a storm or an attack.
Couple other items on your list. Place big warning signs on every highway bridge advising motorists of when the structure should have been rebuilt or replaced and when, if ever, work is scheduled to begin. In other words,
you want to build public support to get people to rebuild a highway. Just tell them, hey, every day you're commuting over a bridge that was supposed to be torn down and replaced 15 years ago. People don't know this. And I think that we've reached the point now, and we've seen it in natural gas explosions, some dam and bridge collapses that have been relatively minor, and now the damage from Hurricane Sandy, that we really have used up our infrastructure about as far as we can. I mean, think about how often you drive down a highway and, you know, the road is uneven or it even has potholes. I'm really tired of paying the front-end alignment tax. Go to China. They understand the future. They are building wide, smooth, first-rate roads and enormous storm drain systems so that they can deal with weather. It's astonishing. I was in Stockholm several times 4 years ago, and my wife and I spent several days driving around trying to find a pothole in Stockholm. Could not find a pothole. We would ask the police and bus drivers, you know, where can we find a pothole in the road? And they would look at us like we were nuts because they invest in taking care of the public furniture in a way we don't.
That's David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. Also, he teaches law at Syracuse University, has written several books, and his newest, The Fine Print, has a lot about the country's infrastructure. We'll link you to his cover story in Newsweek entitled 12 Ways to Stop the Next Sandy. David, pleasure as always. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.
And by the way, here's some of the response to David's article in Newsweek. Someone writes, first rule, don't use tax money to rebuild in flood, slide, or fire zones. Don't subsidize insurance for building in these zones. Anyone who wants to build in a hazard zone should do so at their own risk, on their own dime. And in that debate between public and private money, someone says, time to let these billion-dollar companies pony up some money for the equipment the taxpayers have been providing for them. Your thoughts, hereandnow.org.